Welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a place for your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. So for those of you who know me, you might notice that my voice is a little bit different, and I'm really happy to be able to be doing this interview today because 2 days ago I had no voice. So at least it's a little bit deep and maybe even throaty, and you might even call it sexy, but whatever it is, this is what you got with me today. So today we have with us Adam Finnegan. When he was in the eighth grade, he received a vaccine for Hep B. And this caused him various neurological disorders, and he's still suffering from them today. And he's going to tell us about what he learned through congressional hearings. But he has written this book, which he has put a lifetime of work into, this called The Sleeper Agent. And when you hear what these governments have really been doing to us, to our bodies over the years, you will be shocked. But it's important that we know what's happening to us, because just wait till we get started. Okay. Welcome, Adam.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. All right. So let's just go back, and we're going to start with the Hep B. All right. Mm-hmm. So you had this vaccine, eighth grade.
Yeah.
What happened?
They suggested I get it. Well, I was, you know, we went to Costa Rica on a vacation, and they told my parents that I should get it. And so me and my brother did. And I noticed that by freshman year of high school, I was like a mess and having all these neurological problems, mental problems, like anxiety, like intense anxiety, almost like an adrenaline rush kind of anxiety. And I couldn't focus in class. I couldn't pay attention, just a lot of problems. And so they ended up putting me on all these prescription medications to fix that. And it wasn't until much later that I realized that it was that vaccine that started all of these problems, because there were all these other people in that hearing. It was in 1999, I think. And that was the year, or it was 1998. And it was the same year that I got it. And they were talking about how, well, there are all these people there, you know, kind of telling of their stories of how they have all these neurological problems there, and talking about ADHD. Now this, my son has ADHD, this and that. So it was very similar. I was like, wow, that's the reason. And it ties back to the great imitator antigen that I talk about in my book, because it's the same antigen on that Hep B. Like that spike protein is that same immunosuppressive antigen that I talk about in my book. And it will cause what is called immune tolerance, which is chronic. You can think of it as chronic immunosuppression or chronic immune deficiency. And it's what Eric Traub had discovered. And that's kind of that's like that phenomenon. He studied it, and it was like he was trying to induce that with his weapons, these strategic weapons. They're slow acting. So a lot of people think biological warfare, and they think of, you know, creating a biological agent that just kills a lot of people and stuff like that. And that's actually not very successful, even, you know, because acute diseases, they are very apparent. They're very visible. You can spot people who are sick, and they're easy to contain. And a lot of times these fatal diseases, they will kill a bunch of people and then burn out. What this does, this was geared for a long-term strategic attack. Like, so you make an agent that slowly, you tire, exhaust, and overwhelm the enemy slowly over time. That's kind of like the strategy, intoxication of the population, just poisoning them basically slowly. And he started to weaponize all sorts of things with this, and it would take to the central nervous system, And he would always find that when he could induce this immune tolerance, he would notice a secondary neurotropic effect. So it always had an effect on the brain when you throw the immune system into disarray. All of these viruses that you have within you start reactivating. And he noticed, so this neurological disease goes hand in hand with it.
Well, and then you contracted Lyme, right?
And I, you know, it's very possible that I may have had it, that my mother may have given it to me. You know, she probably had it for a long time. She got, it can lie dormant for a long time too. That's another thing. And she got sick, really sick in like in 2000 to like, I don't know, 2010 or something. And then in 2016, I got really sick and I got a full-blown chronic disease. And I was kind of like, well, all of the symptoms that had come and gone over the years just kind of like came online and were there constantly. I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense now that, you know, I never realized that maybe I was sick all the whole time. But I got, you know, sometimes you can get a tick bite and you get a second dose of it and you get really sick. But I got sick and they're like, oh, you just have viral labyrinthitis because I was really dizzy and it was almost like vertigo. They're like, oh, it'll go away in a few weeks. It never went away. I got sicker and sicker and sicker. I started to talk to people in you know, like groups when back when I was on social media, and I had suspected that it was Lyme disease for a while, but you know, the test that the CDC uses as a standard basically phases out and makes it so most people can't test positive because they only, you know, that you have to make like a lot of antibodies to test positive on those tests, and most people can't because it's so immunosuppressive. But there's like a 15% range of people who can. But the other, you know, the other 80, five or whatever will test negative, even if they have it. And eventually I got tested at, I went to like the Lyme doctor and got the test and found that I did have it. And then I had like the mycoplasma co-infections. They didn't find the other co-infections that are usually present, but they probably are there. They probably are there. As he put a lot of stuff into these ticks. And so I started to get involved with like these Lyme groups and Lyme activists, and I found a group called Truth Cures. Who had shown why you can't test positive on that CDC test, and how it was actually like a fraudulent test, how they knew that what they were doing. And so I got really into that, and then I remember when I got sick, I was like, I'm going to write this book, and I started looking into Eric Traub again. Well, that group, Truth Cures, actually taught me about this phenomenon called immune tolerance. Okay. And then I started, it took me a long time to really understand what it was. And it's kind of, I don't know, it could, because of our understanding of immunology is this way. And it's kind of like she's showing it's another way. And I started to learn that. And then I had read that book, Lab 250, 7 years ago. Michael Carroll wrote that he's like the one who made Eric Traub's name like a lot more popular. Most people know his name from that book. And that was a really great book. He didn't talk a whole lot about Eric Traub, but it did spark an interest in me. So years later when I got sick, I was like, oh, I'm gonna look into this guy. And I actually contacted John Loftus. John Loftus was the source for that book about Eric Traub. And, you know, because he wrote The Bellara Secret back in 1982. And in that book, he talked about, he was the first one to make the connection he said, my sources have told me that the Lyme disease epidemic was related to biological warfare activities. And he was saying it was spread by ticks before they acknowledged that it was being spread by ticks. So he had good intelligence on that. And then the following year, they admitted that it was being spread by ticks, but they said those Plum Island tests never took place. So I contacted him. I actually had made this like timeline a long time ago. I sent it to him and he was really impressed. And then he's like, why don't you give me a call? So we talked and it was great. And so he's like, oh, I got some filmmakers that are working on a screenplay about the same thing. Why don't you come in and help us? And so I met these two other girls, women. I always say girls, women, who are really great people, Crystal and Jody. And we kind of had like this, it was me, John Loftus, and the two women that were doing the film. And so I kind of acted as like their researcher. I was like, if you can help me out and help me get a lot of these documents and stuff. And they did. They helped me, you know, financially to get a lot of stuff, which is very helpful. And I'd be writing my book and I would tell them as I'm writing, you know, like what the story as I'm finding it out. And it was just marvelous. It was, they were a really big help. And so it went like that for a number of years. I mean, I think the screenplay is already being made. Really? I think she said that they're already doing it. In those years, I mean, I just went full speed, you know, just every day. Just I wanted to know this story. I was like, I gotta find this story out, you know. And I think I nailed it. I mean, John Loftus was giving me really good intelligence or information about a lot of things that were in the classified realm. He didn't, you know, tell me, you know, what he couldn't tell me, but he would hint to me, you know, look into this and this and this. And some of the Russian connections I was just, you know, blown away by, because I never thought to even look into them. You know, I never thought to look over there and, you know, I kind of challenged my world view at the time. And I was just like, hey, they're nothing. They, you know, they couldn't have.
I can tell you, my worldview has been challenged as well as I read this stuff. And everybody look behind Adam to the right and you'll see all these binders and there's actually more that you can't see.
Oh, that's so.
It took him 6 years to write this book and he had to translate from other languages, especially German. He has tremendous references in this book. With every chapter, it's followed up by all these references. So he's done an amazing job. And so, okay. So in the build-up to World War II, before that happened, infectious wars were already playing out. We didn't know. And you say that Britain was using dirty tricks to turn America against Germany and turning Germany against America. And then there was this Spanish flu of 1918. But it's crazy how this came about. So can you tell us this backstory to how the Spanish flu came about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so the Russians at the time thought that it was a biological weapon. They thought that it was a British biological weapon from an avian virus. And that was kind of like the event that got them saying, okay, we have to go all out in biological warfare. And of course, the typhus epidemics that were ravaging the Soviet Union, which were sent in by Germany through prisoners of war. But as far as the Spanish influenza, Britain was doing all of this research on, you know, these viral bacterial synergies that occur. And so with the Spanish influenza, most people, it would, the influenza would come through and just wreak havoc on their immune system, right? And then what it would do is it would, these bacterial infections would come online and kind of deliver the death blow. And back then, it was called infectious catarrh, which is mixed infections. It's a thing that Traub really got into as well. But so when it damages the immune system, then you get these bacterial pneumonia that comes on and it delivers a death blow. So they were looking into all of that. They were isolating viruses, you know, in 1890s or so, 1900, early 1900s, and it seems, you know, John Loftus says that it was a complete accident, but I'm not convinced of that. Like I really, there is evidence to suggest that actually, yes, it was a biological weapon, but it's not 100%. We don't know 100%, but you know, so Germany was going around spreading all of these Germany was going around infecting all of these horses, like military horses and medical horses, okay? With all of these germs, glanders and anthrax and things like that. But then British intelligence had infiltrated this, and they were trying to like beef it up to make it more costly. They're like, let's give the Germans a little help to make them look worse, you know, so that America will be against Germany. And Britain actually started it by sending, you know, cattle with foot and mouth disease. They infected our shipments of cattle to Germany with foot and mouth disease, and they thought it was an attack by us. So that's what kind of started this whole German sabotage program. So then they sent their agents over here, started infecting all of these horses, and there was this one very shady guy who seems to have been British intelligence. Eric von Steinmetz, his name is, and travels through Asia in enemy territory instead of going through neutral Scandinavia like the other ones. Excuse me. But it looks like he had that form of glanders that was called melioidosis, which was something that they called the Vietnamese time bomb because it could lay dormant for a long time. And so when they're infecting these horses, you got to remember a lot of these medical horses are going to be used for research purposes and for making things like, so they used some of the horse tissues in making a vaccine, which they went down to Kansas to test on the Fort Riley soldiers, and this was the meningococcus vaccine. And so what they do is the so this guy infects these horses, and we have him down at the Rockefeller Institute. He was down there infecting the horses at the Rockefeller Institute. And then he noticed that it didn't take effect. There was no disease in the horses. He goes into the Rockefeller Institute, asks them to take a look at his germs and stuff. But that was probably that new form of glanders, melioidosis. So glanders is one of those bacterial diseases that affects horses, and it's really nasty. It can also affect humans. But
It's a bunch of a blister, right? You blister
yeah, and it
inside.
just it, yeah, but it. Yeah, it's nasty though, and it can kill you. But this new form, and it seems it shows up in a British area of Asia, a British controlled area of Asia. It first shows up, so it almost seems like, you know, they were you know, modifying things and making new forms of this, and so they go down and they start, the horse tissue is used to, in the medium that they grow the meningococci on, okay? So it's not the horse blood isn't direct, or the horse tissue isn't used directly in that vaccine, but in the growing medium, which can contaminate the germs and things like that. But they went down there and they started testing this vaccine. It was really harsh. A lot of people couldn't finish the shots. So it was like four shots they had to take over a number of weeks. They couldn't do it, and they got really sick, bad reactions. And then a month later, that's when the Spanish influenza shows up in Fort Riley. And then they pack them all in ships, send them over, to Europe, and then just like dynamite. And I did show that so the Spanish influenza is partially an avian virus, an avian influenza. And I did show that Britain was actually, it looked like Britain was almost like testing in the years preceding it, testing to try and make something like this. So they look really guilty, but we can't pin it on them 100%. But the Soviets, their intelligence, Soviet intelligence thought it was a biological weapon. So I tend to think it might be.
And you explain, why it was called the Spanish flu, because the press in all the other countries were silencing this. The only
Yeah.
open press was the one in Spain. So they were talking about it, and so they
Yeah.
labeled it the Spanish flu, but it had nothing to do with
Yeah, it should have been called the Fort Riley influenza.
them.
But
Oh.
so it was a they noticed, there was all that research though that shows that was showing. Oh, and they were even researching, some of the Brits were even researching how glanders reactivates when somebody gets influenza or something. If it's latent, they have latent glanders and they get influenza, it reactivates. So it's almost like, were they trying to like induce this by, these horses? It may have been an accident too. Maybe they were just trying to, cause a certain amount of damage in America. And they didn't realize, it kind of got out of control. That might have happened too. But I, you know, John, John doesn't, John thinks it was an accident. I don't really, I think it, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Britain was guilty for that.
It's so scary. So let's talk about the Soviet tick research. So it was tick studies disguised as research. Talk about
M.P.
that.
Chumakov. So they had a tick program very early on, right? And they, so there was this, they started to realize the value of this, and it was very early on, and it was in 1937 that Stalin had these guys start testing all of these new weapons on the Muslims and Mongolians in the Siberia and these, regions where, Stalin didn't really like these people. And of course, there was a big, there was that big, there was like a big, almost like a war against these people from the Soviet Union because they didn't like Stalin and stuff. And so I think they could, the Mongolian, there was like, I forget what it was called, but he killed a lot of people out there. It was like they were revolting or something, right? But he started just, putting them in prison, start killing them. He sent these people down and start testing all of these lab enhanced diseases, right? And what people have to understand, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just gonna put this thing up here so I'm not like banging on the thing and it's
Okay,
kicking up on
sure.
it. So they started testing these lab enhanced diseases, and what people have to remember is back before the recombinant DNA technology is not was never needed to make biological weapons, like, because there's all those arguments where these people are trying to, say that there's no way that Lyme disease could be a biological weapon because the technology just wasn't there yet, because in the 1970s when they made recombinant DNA technology, no, they had all sorts of ways. They had all sorts of ways of bioengineering way before this, and they still use it today because it doesn't leave footprints of genetic engineering like the recombinant DNA. it's they use animal passages, certain animal passages, and certain animals bring certain effects. Like it changes the virus or microbe in certain ways by continuing to run it through certain animals. And they Eric Traub had made a fine art of it, but everybody else knew about it as well. And that's how they did it. So in 1937 or so, you start seeing these hemorrhagic fevers, Ebola-like diseases start coming and burning through these populations. You had tick encephalitis and all sorts of just new diseases. And there was one guy who was on that expedition. His name was M.P. Chumakov. M.P. Chumakov, and he became perhaps the most valuable bioweaponeer for the Soviet Union. He was one of the top people. And they started testing all of this stuff, and they kicked out all of the Western doctors from so that nobody could see it, like back in that time. They caused a lot of deaths. They tested those weapons, and they were even, you know, hybridizing ticks, making new breeds, you know, that would be more suitable for certain, you know, spreading certain diseases. And it was a very, there's a lot of CIA, declassified CIA documents that I cite. That show all of this stuff. I just have so much research on that. And this guy, M.P. Chumakov, he was testing some of these hemorrhagic fevers on mentally ill patients, said it was bad. And so, you know, and this is the guy who later teams up with Albert Sabin to make the oral polio vaccine. It's going to be given to millions of Americans.
Oh my gosh.
Excuse me. Yeah, so and here's one more shocking piece of information. His son Konstantin Chumakov has been running vaccine safety and review at the FDA, and he's the one who approved the COVID shots, and he's been approving, I think now he's retired, but he was there. He approved the COVID shots.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah. And his brother is like Putin's biodefense guy. It's just really crazy. But when you read about M.P. Chumakov and you see his history, to know that his son is in the FDA is frightening. It's frightening that this could go, you know, unnoticed. Like, this guy's got a background that is extremely, you know,
nefarious.
Yeah, exactly. So why would you even take the chance to put somebody like that?
Wow.
But it just goes to show our system has kind of been totally taken over. And the last chapter, he talks about how, oh yeah, all our people, because the Soviet Union came to an end. It wasn't the end of that empire. It wasn't the end of, you know, the bioweapons program still, you know, went on. I mean, it was kind of like run by a deep state or a bunch of mafia people and just certain groups, right, that would continue. And so the end of the Soviet Union was just the end of the Soviet Union in name, you know, in the form of the government. Those groups still continued on. And what happened, though, was that they got a lot of people to come over here and start working. So, you know, back when the Soviet Union was still there, they couldn't come over here unless they informed for the KGB, probably got important bioweapons guys like that and stuff. They couldn't travel, you know, without permission. And it was very strict. But when the Soviet Union came to an end, it was like, and Konstantin Chumakov says it in the last chapter, he's like, all our people from that university, which is Moscow University, all our people came over here, and now they fill top positions in public health, lab chiefs, full professors at, you know, in academia. He's basically saying, oh, they're all claiming nobody stayed. Everybody came over here, and now they work here. So it's like, you know, I just It's shocking to me that our intelligence and our system can't see something like that. It's just so compromised. And you know, it's not surprising that people can't get any help for these diseases, which were the main goal of what they were designing over there to attack us with. In our system, we don't recognize immune tolerance. Immune tolerance is basically like the basis of chronic disease, the basis, and you know, all of the autoimmune stuff too, because when your immune system, see, I think autoimmune happens in parallel with this immunosuppression. So you
And
get both.
immunosuppression from vaccines, is that sort of what this is related to?
What can happen? It can happen, you know, like you can get a tick bite and get Lyme disease and all of these biological agents that Eric Schaub had produced. But you can also get the same disease from all of these vaccines that are using that antigen. Because that was my point in the book. It's like this antigen is what causes the disease. This antigen is what the weapon is. Okay? It's not that it's not the spirochete. It's not the virus, it's this protein, this lipid spike protein, and you know, and or outer surface protein. And it's a lipid, it stimulates the certain receptors that throw the immune system into disarray. If you want to go technical with it, it's TLR2 and 1 and TLR2 and 6, which are toll-like receptors. Like your immune system has receptors, just like your brain has receptors for chemicals. Your immune system has receptors, and there are certain ones that, when stimulated, it just throws it into disarray. And it can happen in degrees, but then there are a lot of people who just get this full-blown, you know, incapacitating disease. And I, you know, when I was talking and I was involved in all those Lyme groups, we had a lot of people there who had the same disease and they got sick because of vaccines. And it's the same disease as Lyme disease because it's that antigen that's causing the disease. So they try putting it in vaccines and they call it a vaccine, or you know, you put it on a spirochete, right? It's the same thing. It's going to cause the same disease. The spirochetes almost act like a secondary infection. They're almost like irrelevant when that immune tolerance is activated, because when this spike protein does that, the immune system goes off grid, and then what happens is all of those latent viruses, like Epstein-Barr virus, human herpes virus 6 is one of them, which is the encephalitis. It's not the STD, but there's those 8 human herpes viruses, and EBV is like number 4, and it's very common. And then you have 6. I had shown that I had reactivated Epstein-Barr virus and the encephalitis one. And then I know a lot of girls have the cytomegalovirus reactivation. I don't know why it's more prevalent in girls, but it is. Cytomegalovirus is another one. And so these viruses, when the immune system goes off grid, these viruses, and a lot of them are neurotropic,
Okay.
so that means they attack and deteriorate the brain. They're neurotropic. So even herpes simplex, right? Even herpes simplex, when reactivated from latency, can be neurotropic and also oncogenic, meaning cancer causing. A lot of these reactivated viruses have a high potential for causing cancer. And so that the spike protein that the recent COVID shot is getting people's body to produce is the same antigen that I talk about in that book that causes the immune tolerance. And a lot of people are getting the same disease from that.
This is terrifying.
Yeah, I mean.
Terrifying. So cancer could be a result of all of this, or it is a result of all this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean,
Okay.
and you know, people are getting like just shot after shot after shot. A lot of these vaccines have that answer. I mean, influenza is one of them that has it. Okay. So you're getting flu shots, you're getting the same antigen. and God knows what else, because all of these contamination with things like mycoplasma is a major problem in vaccine manufacturing that they don't want to do anything about. It's too costly. It's a major problem, but they don't really do anything about it. And people are injecting it into them. But there's also all of these contaminant viruses that come in, and you know, all of this junk from animals and whatever else. But absolutely, this is a major contributor to cancer. And Eric Jobs showed, okay, he realized that he could raise the cancer rate to 50% in these mice colonies. Okay. And basically later on, so I found some papers where they were looking at inducing immune tolerance in the population as a defense mechanism, like as a defense strategy. Okay. Because yeah, okay, you can knock out the immune system, right? And then, you know, you get these more fatal viruses that come through, and a lot of people actually won't get sick with it because their immune system is down, and they're just it challenges the way most people understand of immunosuppression, but they don't get it, right? But these people who are suggesting this in biodefense don't add that, yeah, well, we could induce immune tolerance, but then, you know, we're going to have all these people with major chronic diseases, and we're going to have people with all of these cancers and mental illnesses. The chronic disease and the neurological thing goes hand in hand. And with the neurological thing, you get psychiatric symptoms as well.
Wow.
You know?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so I've made the point that, you know, I think the vaccine thing is probably the number one driver of that in this country. Is there's, you know, people are getting just shot after shot. It's burning the immune system out. It's burning the immune system out. Stacking all of these shots and just constantly agitating the immune system burns it out. That's the thing. It's like we only have one immune system. And I don't think it's designed to just continue trying to fight what's being injected into you. You know, and I don't think you should be injecting anything into you. I don't think we're designed to have that.
Mm-mm.
You know. But it's frightening because it's like, you know, in the children, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like they're doomed at this point with the amount of shots that they have to take to go to school. I mean, they are guaranteed. I would be surprised if they, you know, they will probably, most of them will probably have chronic diseases, possibly by the teenage years, but definitely by their 30s. And that was another thing that Eric Traub noticed with these immune tolerant mice, that when he discovered it, and what he did when he discovered it. So he took it was like some kind of antigens in bouillon or whatever you call it. And he injected it into a mouse's brain because he wanted to see if he could reactivate a dormant virus, right? Because he got the idea from Richard Shope, and they went to Idaho or Iowa. No, they went to Iowa. And there was like this outbreak of what is called pseudo rabies, a swine herpes virus. And they realized, they were trying to figure out what it was and how it came about. And they realized that it was a dormant pig virus that reactivated. So Eric Traub had this idea. You could reactivate a virus. He tried to reactivate a virus with these mice by injecting it with these proteins. And he caused an epidemic of lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus. So he reactivated a virus, and then the mouse got sick and then started spreading it to all the other mice. So he basically started an epidemic from scratch. And what this shows also is that an injection can start these things. So it's not that much different than somebody getting a vaccine, what he did, you know. You know, you can reactivate viruses when you throw the immune system into disarray, and with these lipids, these lipid-like antigens. I mean, when you think about how olive oil. You pour olive oil in water. It doesn't mix, right? Well, with these lipids, these lipid-like antigens, they also, when they inject them into you, into your blood, they also don't mix, and they clump together, and they clump to your tissues, and they clump to all of, your just, they start, and they can also kind of reproduce themselves, so to speak. Like, they accumulate themselves, because the way they work is, it's just very diabolical. And so these are also, they're immunosuppressive, and they're neurotropic, and they're just, they accumulate in the body. They stick to all your joints. It's nasty. And so they're completely ignoring it. I mean, they have to know about it. They knew about Eric Schaub's work and all these findings, and they actually went out of their way to bury all of those findings as it related to infectious disease. And in 1960, they gave the Nobel Prize to these two guys, Peter Medawar and Frank McFarlane Burnett, for immune tolerance. But they made it about organ transplants, because the same thing happens with organ transplant recipients. They get a new organ, and all sorts of viruses and things of that nature, and it just throws the immune system into disarray. But it's far more important to identify it as it relates to infectious disease, because this really, challenges the way that our immunology is set up. Like, what he showed is these mice could have a nasty infection, but they have no antibodies. They had no antibodies to it. The mothers would pass it down to the next mice. All of those mice would be born sick. He said that the immune tolerant mother invariably gives birth to infected progeny, and they're all immune tolerant. So they're spreading stuff, and they don't even have any antibodies. When we test for things, we look for antibodies, but we don't realize, these things could be present without antibodies. And then I think his findings also would have challenged the way our vaccine science is set up too, because this is basically how these vaccines are working. They're burning out the immune system, so you have less symptoms, like outward symptoms, but then you have all these inner problems. Okay. Right. So you're kind of like, and when you think about how you get sick and you're all puffed up and visible inflammation, well, that's your immune system working, trying to keep stuff out of your central nervous system and your organs and all that stuff. It's just fighting, puffing it up. It puffs up your skin and stuff and get inflammation. It's trying to fight it off and keep it out, right? But with these injections, it's like just slowly burning it out. So then, it doesn't fight back, and it just it allows a central nervous system invasion of other things. And what you're vaccinating against too, you can still get it. You won't have the outward symptoms to it, but it can still start wreaking havoc in your central nervous system and your organs.
Wow.
And they noticed that with, the COVID, there are all these people getting the vaccine, but they still get the virus, right? And it's still there.
So it's not full blown on the outside, apparently.
Yeah.
But it's doing the full blown damage to the body.
Yeah, and he basically showed how chronic disease works, and he talked about how they didn't have any antibodies to anything, and they didn't look sick on the outset, right? But they had festering infections in their brain and central nervous system and in their organs,
mm-hmm.
right? And they would start having, he noticed that they would start having, they'd be born, they would be infected and everything, but they would look healthy. And then halfway through their life, they start coming down with these neurological diseases and these like slowly, you know, chronic wasting diseases, basically.
Oh, gosh.
And they still looked normal, but they were all messed up inside. And he basically showed how he said, the blood work is entirely, it looks normal. The blood work looks normal and there's no antibodies. So that's basically what he showed. And so all these people with chronic diseases, that's what they're dealing with. They go in, they try to get tested for things. They don't have antibodies because their immune system's completely shot. And they don't have, and the lab work always comes back normal. Every time I go, like even at my sickest, when I was like, just felt like I was dying, I'd go get blood work. Like, oh, you look great.
Perfect.
It looks great.
Me too.
And so I was like, oh, yeah, well, something's obviously wrong here because I feel like death. You're telling me everything's great, you know,
mm-hmm.
And also what he said, you know, because you go to get scans as well. Like my head feels like it's caving in. I still have permanent headaches that never go away. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure that out. It's like, what's going on? It feels like my head being, you know, crushed, take scans or whatever. They're like, oh, well, everything's great. Right. And that's what Eric Schaub was showing in this, is saying the scans will come back normal. There'll be no visible inflammation. They'll have a festering infection in their central nervous system, in their inner, you know, the organs and everything. And also, I think he said that the virus clears from the blood or something like that. Right. So there's a lot of things that can infect you without even being in the blood. And that was a lot of what his work was about. In Germany, he was making these stealth viruses and things that would not show up in the blood, that would just take to the organs and the brain. But he showed all of these factors of chronic disease with all of these people. You know, they got documentaries like trying to make fun of people with the myalgic encephalomyelitis thing, you know, trying to make them look crazy and stuff, because, you know, there was like a documentary, I forget what it was called, but it was like, they're painting this guy had this, you know, the myalgic encephalomyelitis with the chronic headaches and the chronic disease. And he couldn't get any help. And the doctors were telling him it was in your head and you have mental problems. And they made this documentary about it and just made him look bad. Right. Just made him try to paint him like he was crazy or something. And he's not. And Eric Schaub's work shows exactly how this stuff works. And that's like why this book is so important. It's not the Lyme disease is not really, you know, that's kind of like, I made it the apex of the books, like the
mm-hmm. It's what, you know, sort of motivated you. But what
he had discovered is so much bigger. Like this immune tolerance thing, it explains all of that, because when your immune system is down, it's like you get that chronic disease. That's what starts it.
Right.
And so why is the immune system down? Well, these antigens will do that to you. And they're injecting them into people, you know, constantly. From the moment of birth, you get your Hep B vaccine the moment of birth. There's that antigen being injected into the body at right after birth. And it's not surprising that we have so many problems. In the United States is number one in chronic disease, number one in mental illness, and probably number one in cancer, I think.
Oh my gosh.
And so this is what I called the dark triad of immune tolerance. Okay. Chronic disease, mental illness and neurological problems, and cancer.
And that's our society. This is what we're dealing with.
Exactly. And saw, I think, the cancer rate skyrocket after those COVID shots. And I mean, it was constantly going up, you know, even before that. And then, you know, of course, other things too add to that. You got a lot of chemicals, you got things in the food. There was this book that I had read called The Age of Treason by this guy, R. Swinburne Climber, who had shown all of these. There were these plots, these Soviet plots, actually, communist plots to poison America by, adding fluoride to the water, putting all this stuff in the food. They're trying to use all the put all these growth hormones into the chickens that we eat and stuff, and that would and it was he was showing the quotes of the people saying it, like I think it was Anna Pauker. I think she was like this communist from some country, who's talking to this princess of Romania or something, and was telling her about these plants. And so he's showing like some of the quotes, and it's just like, wow, shocking. But it went like almost right in line with my story. It was like, that was the plan. They wanted to poison us. So it wasn't just the Soviets, but it was the Nazis too. And they had plans that if they were defeated, there'd be the Fourth Reich, like a network of Nazis afterwards that would continue trying to destroy America and their enemies.
Feeling sick.
Yeah, and
Sorry.
so Eric Traub, he was like the he's the center person of this book. He's so important because he's the one who discovered this immune tolerance, and he's the one studied it his whole life. He's the one who made all of these weapons, that would induce that. And like I and he was he it seems like he got blackmailed. It seems that he got blackmailed by the Soviets. So when he was in East Germany, and the Soviets took East Germany at the end of the war, he fell under this Russian occupation. They were interrogating his lab people, and they were interrogating about war crimes. They're saying, did you use the animal crematory to dispose of human bodies and stuff? So it's likely that they did. And it's likely that he got blackmailed, and they're like, okay, you can work for us, and we won't send you to Nuremberg. So,
So I have to, we're running out of time, Adam. So I have
yeah.
two questions I want to ask you. All right.
Okay.
The first one is, who is Dr.
Oh yeah, I mean,
Fauci?
it,
What is his relationship to this whole thing?
well,
Because there's some.
I think he's just one of those people among this group that kind of began festering into our public health system. And like, all you got to do is look at MP Chumakov's son, Konstantin Chumakov, being at the FDA, right? And Albert Sabin, also a very suspicious guy. And so there are all these people that were kind of like in with this group, and I started flooding the public health system. And he's just another one of those people that, not on our side, is probably the enemy within.
Okay. And the other question I want to ask you is there a way to reverse this? Can we bring our body back to homeostasis?
Well, I believe there is a way, and I mean, I'm trying to get there. I kind of feel though that you should take that journey yourself. And I'm kind of like, I've seen a lot of people spend tons and tons of money and not get any better, by listening to these doctors that they don't even know what's going on with the person. They don't even understand what immune tolerance is. And so it's like all guesswork, and it's just like they're just burning through their life savings. So I kind of feel like you should not. I kind of feel like you should just take your own journey and kind of, research what health is for yourself, and really try to go at it. I'm taking like a natural route. I also have like a lot of spiritual elements in my, recovery or my healing processes. So I think that's also very important. And also, finding your purpose here and having a purpose here, being driven. I feel like a lot of that stuff is also important. I think getting out, exercise, and there's also a lot, I got off social media because I just felt like it doesn't do anything for my life.
No, it
So there's
doesn't.
all sorts of stuff that we're being bombarded with that are just really doing a number on society. So I just feel like you got to take the journey for yourself, but you definitely take it. And
That's great advice. I mean, I've been on this journey since I was 19 years old when chronic fatigue hit me. And but this journey of discovery has made me who I am. I completely agree with you. It's brought me to where I am. It's given me the wisdom that I have to do the work that I do in many different ways. And you're right, it is a journey. I finally found a doctor who actually hears me. And he's pretty aware of all of these kind of things. So it's interesting. But,
I mean, yeah, you can find a doctor that just like you can feel if you feel like they can do it, you know. It's just
Yeah, I mean, the
all
doctor
I say
hears.
is just kind of like be aware
Right,
of
but I've been through gurus and weird stuff and energy and this. I have tried, and I'm sure you have too. I've tried everything
to a
through
degree.
through the years, and nothing really, really helped. But the journey, it is in the journey of discovery that we grow, and I'm very
And
spiritual
even
too.
if we if even if we couldn't get 100% better, we still have to make the best of life and do our work here and do what we came here to do.
And you're doing what you came here to do. So, had this not happened to you, this research would not have come out. So, everybody, here's this book, The Sleeper Agent. Your mind will be, I mean, already, I'm sure if you're listening to this show, your mind is blown. Mine is, I feel like I don't want to go outside. I feel like it's death all around me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to make it that way. It was just like
No, but
things that are
I'm just.
left undealt with. It's like I gotta kind of bring it all to the surface. So I'm not really like, I don't spend my day thinking about this stuff all day. I'm a optimistic person. I'm upbeat, but there are dark things in the world, and that's kind of the thing we gotta sometimes face it, you know?
Well, I think it's important to know. And I'm an upbeat person too. I'm not going to walk around carrying this with me, and I hope nobody who's listening will do that. But we must be informed. I never took the COVID vaccine. I don't believe in flu vaccines. I don't take vaccines, okay? My body is too immunocompromised to put another thing in there, and I know that, so I haven't done any of that. I have not had COVID. I never had the vaccine, never had COVID.
Yeah, me neither.
So I don't understand any of that, but so unfortunately we're out of time. God, I could talk to you all day. This is so cool. This is so cool. But anyway, thank you so much for this work you've done. I mean, this is life-changing for all of us.
It's definitely it's needed for the world. I mean, I kind of felt like I'm just a vehicle for something higher moving through me to write that book, you know?
You absolutely are. The book has written, yeah, the book has come from a different source, and you're the person who it was landed on. And I believe that's how my books have been written too. So I thank you so much. It was really great talking to you.
Yeah, it was a
I mean,
pleasure to
I
be
know we
here.
only touched the surface of all of this, but if everybody picks up this book, everybody spread this word, okay? Let everybody know. Tell people to watch this show so that they can get informed too. Don't let the government do these things to us. We have a right to be healthy. All right. It's wonderful talking to you. Have a great, great day.
You too.
Appreciate it.
Bye.